To Be Continued, a Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out at To Be Continued, a Fanboy Podcast.com. Please also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and you can also listen to us on our various platforms on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
To Be Continued is an adult podcast for adults by adults. We may talk about superheroes, sci-fi, comic books, and all sorts of similar crap like that, but we may use adult and frank language when we do so. This is not a podcast for kids, brothers and sisters. Enjoy. Welcome back! It's To Be Continued. Fanboy podcast. a fanboy codpast? What would that even be? A fanboy podcast. You're not going to learn anything, but if you stick around, you just might have some fun.
With Sergeant Pepper's Lonely's Hot Club Band.
Ed is right now, co-host Edward Ng. I'm Miguel right Velez. Is pointing to our producer with the mostiest t-shirt right now.
The Fat
Jonathan Four. Jonathan Vergara wearing his Sergeant Pepper's Beatles t-shirt.
Well, look, it's John has got the goatee, and so you know we could say that you're going through a Sergeant Pepper.
Honestly, yeah, he is fitting because they all it is the picture where they all have facial hair going on. You know, it's like no, but I don't. None of them have committed to the beard. It's all mustache. It's all mustache, which is what the ladies say about me.
So I mean, are you doing some LSD right now? You know,
a little LDS,
a little
LDS. You know, back in Berkeley, back in the days. Anyway, we are To Be Continued, a fanboy podcast, covering your fanboy passions. Kind of just a gab fest here, covering a couple of topics.
Why not?
Not to be confused with friend of the show, King of Star Wars, Jeremy Martin's catchphrase.
Why not?
But I guess it's in that. It does fit the vibe. It's in the spirit of that. We will be talking about a terrible loss that we had recently. No, we're not talking about most of downtown LA. which is another thing that happened while we were away. But we lost, I would say,
a monster of an icon.
A monster of icon. Yes, absolutely. You know.
Well, haven't you guys noticed that bad things happen when we don't do the podcast?
Wow! John is putting a lot of pressure on us now.
We're holding the world together.
Are you saying that? Are you saying that I
coming undone?
Are you saying I caused the Trump win? Because if that's what you're saying, again, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure for you to get my shit together here, man, if the whole world's going to go on fire if I'm not.
Well, I mean, you know, there's been a steady amount of deaths in the past year or so, you know. But you know, this one in particular, David Lynch.
David Lynch.
Which we did not cover. Look, we came off of last
a little while ago. Yes, Lynch has passed a while back. But we're going to be talking about him. We're going to be talking about the trailer for the Fantastic Four, which came out two days ago.
Yeah.
Which is a teaser for the Super Bowl Sunday.
Go Birds! The Birds. Oh, this is a sideline for you for you guys who are not sports fans. Okay, but because the Buffalo Bills could not save us. Okay, and we were all rooting for them. Okay?
I want you to understand it right now.
And the Birds are going to be taking their vengeance behalf of the Buffalo
Bills. Ed has me in a headlock
because
right
Mahomes,
now.
Because Mahomes, and while we love Kelce,
look,
Mahomes and company have to be stopped.
We talked
right
about
now.
This. We weren't going to convert it to a sports podcast. All right, let me go.
You know what's funny? So, like, last night, we don't live far from all of us here. We don't live far from Barclays Center. I took Clark to see my first basketball game in person. And it's funny, like Rosie, Clark's godmother, who gets free tickets, is like, hey, you guys want to go see the Nets play tonight versus the Warriors? I'm like, the Warriors? I get to see Steph Curry, all right. Oh, no, not the Warriors. It's actually
the Wizards.
It's actually the Washington Wizards. I'm like, What? The Wizards?
Now we know. Now we know why you got those.
We left Barclays Center, like, and I'm like, this is the dumbest, such a waste of time. The Wizards are all the way in the bottom of the pile of the Eastern Conference, and the Nets, number 12, lost to them. So we completely. But Clark had
we
fun.
Now we you know are we before are podcast. We now are we now a Wizard hate podcast?
No, but we are pro Philly.
We're pro Philly.
We are pro Philly. Okay, for you guys out there, Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You better believe it when Super Bowl Sunday comes.
All right.
Ed, I
have some news for you right now. I would like everyone to welcome to the podcast, Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito. Oh, yeah. I've got my guns. Danny, why do you have your guns?
Have some news. Your mother's a whore.
So yeah, we will be talking about David Lynch and
Jalen Hurts. Go Jalen Hurts.
We will be talking about the Fantastic Four. We will discuss a little bit of the Captain America: Brave New World. Trailer release that's coming to us soon. So when we come back, we will cover all that after these words from friends.
Freddy's Bar, a Brooklyn local institution located at 652 Fifth Avenue, Park Slope, Brooklyn. If you're thirsty and if you're looking to support local artists and musicians, come on over to Freddy's or check them out at freddysbar.com.
Now, Johnny, you and I, we've played gigs there, right?
Yeah.
And they've got a whole back room full of live entertainment. So after a long week at working from home during these times, close up and come hang out with your buddies at Freddy's Bar. That's freddysbar.com.
And
we're back. Wait, are you still humming the ending of Dune?
Bring it on, Toto. Now here's the question. Is that Toto?
That is Toto.
Or is that Jean-Luc Picard playing whatever electrified weird ass instrument
yes,
he was?
Yes, of course.
I know course. I know a lot of Toto.
He tells a story. I don't know if you ever heard it, but Pat Stu, who tells a story about his time or just getting hired for Dune. He gets the call and it's like, okay, here's what you're going to do and whatever. And he says, I've never met David Lynch. I walked into the room and I go, hello, hi, I'm Jonathan. And David Lynch just looks me over up and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
David Lynch went to some Shakespeare play where Pat Stu had a wig on. And David Lynch is telling his whoever he's with, it's like, I want that guy.
That's
I want that guy.
That's my Gurney Halleck. That's my Gurney Halleck. That. His assumption was his Gurney Halleck came with hair.
So he goes into the room, right? You know,
and who are you?
Who are you?
Really doesn't know anything. Well, I'm Patrick Stewart. But I'm on
eventually,
the call sheet.
Eventually, Pat Stu does. You know, he says like, and later on, you know, after the fact. I have dinner with David Lynch, and David Lynch is like, I'm so sorry. He apologizes, and it was very sweet and everything, you know, but you know, David Lynch.
David Lynch.
It's David Lynch, you know.
David Lynch, I want to put my cards on the table as I like to always do. He is a auteur's auteur from my childhood. He is one of those like instantaneous buys into the quote unquote the canon. He's up there with your Scorsese's and that types. But I'm gonna be honest, I was never my guy.
Same.
Was never my guy. As influential and as important as he has been, and there are so many things that have flowed out. Whether it is people, you know, performers who made their bones in his films or got some certain notoriety and then, you know, went on to greater stardom, whether it is his ability to create like cult, you know, projects on almost like a whim, just make something that even though it may not tickle everyone's funny bones, it finds an audience.
You know what's funny?
David Lynch is kind of like your Rush.
No,
I don't know. I don't. Yeah, because we've talked about the same thing.
You're like,
I don't hate it.
You might have a point in this. It's like
they're talented, but it's not my cup of tea.
It's not my thing. Exactly.
It's funny. It's like whenever you watch these, whenever you watch these sort of YouTubes, I would never say Rush is cult. Whenever you watch some of these like YouTubes where people are in a Criterion closet, right? You know, like 8 times out of 10, they'll be like, "Oh, I'm just gonna pull Blue Velvet, everyone.
Blue Velvet, everybody.
I can't live without this movie." And I'm like,
Mulholland Drive.
You know, now again, we can't take anything away from
This is the thing. Like I said, even if he's not my guy, I recognize the astounding influence, the fact that especially in the 80s, there was this sort of like very they got a lot of media spotlight, these sort of like niche auteurs, and they were able to, you know,
they were pretty quirky and artsy.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
They had some of that.
And you
which
know,
the, does set a tone for filmmaking around the 80s and the 90s, right? You know, because everything one could argue and be correct that movies prior to that, they were of a certain cut. And then here comes David Lynch. And then he kind of does change how we watch filmmaking, right?
Yeah,
how we watch
movies. I definitely think he's one of those guys who, even if his people are not, most of the mainstream audience is not ready for the pure uncut shit. And so therefore, you need someone who comes in and sort of filters out the things that he does that might be off-putting, but takes aspects and then popularizes it.
By the way, I'm holding up, you mentioned Rush. On the set of Limelight is an Eraserheads poster,
absolutely full circle. We're ending the podcast now.
We're ending the podcast.
We know it. We did. This was it. We were waiting to find this one picture, and we're done. But no, doesn't that say something about both the type of performers that are in Rush, and who the work of David Lynch appeals to. You know what I mean? Like, again, this is not for I like to put on movies and just eat some popcorn and not really think too hard about it. I don't want to be challenged. I don't want to be in any way, shape, or form made uncomfortable. David Lynch's films are not that. And whether he does these things because he had a sense, because he didn't have a sense of what made normal people uncomfortable, is that what it was? Or was he truly just a truly very normal but very artistic and creative fellow who, you know, was like, no, I think art needs to be, I need to do things that will shake people up. I don't want to just be. He didn't go into the route except for Dune, which was the sort of like dipping his toe into that world. He didn't go the route of the other guys that, you know, were his peers. He didn't do the Spielberg or the George Lucas thing. You know, he got his one shot with Dune and backed the fuck away from that for the rest of his life. And so, no, that's not me. That's not what I do. By the way, he's in Dune.
Yes, I know. He's the guy in the Duke with you.
with the
old fashioned mic.
Have,
you know?
But we have all the spice on board, sir. And then, I mean, think about it. You, as I will always bring up whenever you can, Family Guy. But fucking there, Seth MacFarlane is all like, I just want to have like fucking David Lynch as a character on the show. And how long was he a character on fucking, you know what I mean? This is another one of these cases where it's a guy who dies. It's sad. But when you look back at the breadth of that career, it's quite interesting to the point where towards the end, he hadn't been as prolific as, say, I think his 80s work was. And even then, it wasn't like David Lynch did not put out like a movie a year or something. He wasn't Woody Allen.
I'll say this though. I started, you know, because my best friend Ian and I, we had these discussions, and he is a huge David Lynch fan. And, you know, we had these conversations about Twin Peaks, which was a really huge TV show at its time. We're talking about like 80. Mm-hmm. 84?
Kind of the precursor to the X-Files.
I was just going to say that, right? Because...
And not just because Duchovny appears in it as a transvestite.
He's a transvestite. Duchovny appears as a transvestite on that
FBI
show.
FBI agent.
Which sort of just like brings up like, oh, was this before the time of Janet Reno? or you know...
That goes to my point before of... The mass audience is not ready for the unadulterated shit. Chris Carter comes along and says, what are the aspects that are making this show click with people, with some members of the audience, and what's putting them off? Unfortunately, as always, I will reiterate what my mother has said for going on now 30 years. Chris Carter
needs to be
tarred and fettered and flogged through the streets. Because, you know what, he thought he was so much better than David Lynch, but at the end, he took the stylistics again, more than anything else.
It sets a tone.
He is equally incoherent.
you love to bring up, it's like, because we had to talk about how we approached film watching back in the 90s, and you're like, hey, Ed, how'd you enjoy Smell a Sense of Snow? Yeah, because... That was me, like, because I look, guys, I went to NYU and I didn't study filmmaking and all, but like the Angelica movie house was right there. And I spent, I went to see those movies every other week, you know, with my buddies and my friends, you know. And if you guys grew up, if you were my age around the 90s and you're watching movies, it was a lot of those movies were in a tone that was set by guys like David Lynch,
right?
You know,
just absolutely.
Like, I don't know. I don't know if there's an argument that's like, oh, we wouldn't have gotten something like Pulp Fiction without like David Lynch, which is a very
I think that you, without a doubt, you can't look at Blue Velvet and not see a direct line to Pulp Fiction. You know, one of the things about Blue Velvet is, again, it's the sort of like, what's the seedy underbelly of suburbia, of regular everyday life? What's happening with it behind closed doors that people don't see? It has all of these stylistic touches from different eras. It's in the 80s, but there's so many elements that might as well be the 50s and 60s or the 70s in it, in the same way that, you know, not as in your face as I'd say Tarantino. But definitely there, definitely again, this, you know, you watch that film and it's a lot of like, it's a Rube Goldberg of one small little observation that Kyle MacLachlan makes, like the start of the movie, sends him off into the weirdest fucking, like no different than, say, Bruce Willis's little adventure, you know, in Pulp Fiction. It's that sort of thing. Again, another case of, like I said, people aren't ready for like the really crazy shit. So someone's got to come along and go, what can I pick and choose here that is that appeals to me as a filmmaker? But I know Lynch is not necessarily he doesn't care. He'd never cared about box office.
Right.
So he's an auteur kind of guy. He's, I want to do what I want to do, make what I want to make. And, you know, truly, and in art has to mean something beyond just commerce. And most of his films were like that. I think the most straightforward film he has is The Straight Story. And
The Straight Story, right.
Ironically, it's called The Straight Story. He's nailing it on the head for you. He's like, guys, this is not gonna be Blue Velvet. It's a very personal, very character-driven story. It still is not traditional. It still is definitely like who the kind of people and character and dialogue on it is still Lynch, but I don't want to say he had matured. I'm not an authority to maybe to say that, but there is more of a less of a, I want to freak out the squares. There's a lot less of like, I want to make you uncomfortable. He felt, I want to make this kind of story right now. I just feel like I want to make this kind of story. Again, and not a story that is a box office, you know, like, you know, oh, there's an old farmer and he's driving a tractor to see his brother before he dies, if I'm remembering the movie correctly. And this is one of the things.
I went to the theater to see that.
Like, that's the other thing about Lynch is you...
Watch a guy drive a trailer.
Yeah,
IMAX.
If you were... Yeah, take an IMAX. Hot, shifting, action. One of the things about it is he tows, and you are there. One of the things about him is he is this director from a sort of a similar time frame from your Spike Lee's.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Or we're talking late 70s or really very early 80s. Like
willing to explore, like you say, you know.
Make the audience uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He has the ability to do things that were a little more mainstream because he has things like The Elephant Man under his, which is a movie that is, you know, hey, I'm going to make this movie black and white. Fuck it. It's the 80s and I'm making a feature length black and white movie. And I'm going to use like modern Hollywood makeup effects to do this thing, which is basically just a study of a period of time of this historical individual, the Elephant Man, who had this disease, yada, yada, yada. Which, by the way, that alone freaked me out as a kid. I don't know why. Like today, there is a part of me that goes, huh, Miguel, when you were a kid, you were just like traumatized by the Elephant Man. Something about it traumatized me. And yet, this was literally me missing the point. Missing the point that, as a kid.
That is one by John Hurt, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that it's all about like.
John Hurt.
The war doctor?
The doctor. The war doctor. You
know, I'm sorry, did Lynch ever do a Doctor Who? Because that sounds. Right? That sounds like. Up his alley, right? Like, you do not. Like, again, the idea that people were like, that it was like, oh, hey, Lucas is like, hey. Why don't you come in and like read this, what I got going for Return of the Jedi. I think you could do it. And of course, like he, like, I believe the story is Lynch basically is like, he gets the Ewoks and he's like, I'm out.
You know, he does embolden, you know, cause a film that comes to mind, around that year is Sling Blade, right? You know, Sling Blade, which was like an indie movie of all indie movies,
right,
you know, and a very good one. And that's just a drop in the bucket of indie movies that were made. Everyone in their brother's cousin was an indie filmmaker, right? You know,
but he is
Cronenberg.
Exactly. He is in that sort of like Cassavetes, Cronenberg,
yeah,
kind of tip of the kind of director. When I think of like David Lynch, Lynchian stuff, that's not Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
I think of things like A Brother from Another Planet. You know what I mean? I think of like that weirdo Cassavetes movie that is, you know, both, hey, I'm doing something high concept and strange. No, I'm doing something high concept, but I'm not doing Star Wars. I'm not trying to do something that's very palatable and, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I'm commenting on a lot of different stuff. At the same time, where there is all this stuff where he's like the full unadulterated juice, adds something that he has his admirers, he has his like imitators and stuff. Like I said, I think at the end of the day, I'll cop to it. I'm not sophisticated enough for it.
Yeah,
I'm not thinking about the things that his films are often trying to bring up. I find them not necessarily as engrossing as I think as some of his champions find them. Mulholland Drive is one of those movies where I'm just like,
I love Mulholland Drive. It's just, again, it's not one of
I don't know what it's about.
I have a top five, and that's, you know, like, I can't say Lynch is one of them, right? You know, like, it's either David Lean,
right,
whatever, you know, it's always David Lean's always like top for me, or of course Kurosawa, right? You know, Kurosawa gives birth to the whole popular big epic movie films, right? You know, but David Lynch is a whole different ilk,
right?
A whole different,
and of course, know, one of the biggest reasons why we're even talking about him, I think, while he like I said, he has this one moment where he dips his toe into, I'm gonna try do a big budget science fiction film with a big well-known cast.
What is the Shadow of the Mouse on this?
We call that one Mordib. Can I be known as Paul Mordib?
It's funny. I started watching Twin Peaks, right? You know, and I'm like, oh, it's him. It's that actor. He's in there, which I'm told, like, they had to bring out of. Well, you don't want to tell me, like, they had to bring out of retirement to come back to Twin Peaks. You know, I forget, whatever. But it's like, yeah, you know, I hit I started play on Twin Peaks.
Again, it was one of those things that as a kid, you know, I was still in St. Agatha's. I was still in parochial school. Although I was probably in the later aspects of that, so I maybe it might have been more like 12, 13. Still not at the age where that would. But I again, my buddy in parochial school, he was all into all it. But again, he was. I want to say sorry to not to throw him under the bus, but he had that performative. I'm gonna freak out the squares and be into anything that people think is weird or off-putting. And you know, a lot of the times I'd be like, you don't even like this. You don't like this. You're just putting on a show because you got to be the weird guy, right? You're the weird guy who's into weird stuff.
Do you remember watching that episode of Psych where they explored the Twin Peaks? You know, like
Finn.
I don't know.
It was a reunion show.
Matchick Amick was on that, or Laughlin Bloor. I can't remember. I know Sherilyn Fenn was in it, but like. They had that scene where it's like you walk into the library, everyone's acting weird. Gus,
yeah,
everyone's acting a little weird here, you know.
It was a cinnamon festival. Oh, right?
Yes, but they've got this great pie here.
Yeah, right. cinnamon. There's some sort of cinnamon festival, and Ray, is it Ray Wise is the character actor?
Oh, okay.
Who was also on Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
Had already appeared on site as like a priest or something, and he comes back.
Oh, yeah, okay, yes, okay. Right.
Wow,
right,
and then now it's a psych podcast. Wow. Now we're just doing a psych podcast. But I'm not going to be the guy to pretend that I have all this great love. I can appreciate Lynch, and obviously – Dune is its own almost separate thing. It's almost its own separate subject within his filmography, you know, to the wider, you know, it's so different from anything else he's done. But
please,
also,
my lord, let me fight him.
Well, yeah, it's the film that, you know, gave us Patch Stew. We've talked about it on the show before. It's an interesting time capsule for what it was. I think it's the only Victorian steampunk sci-fi.
The righteous
ever.
I will kill him.
We've got Sting and little leather underpants, just a little thong thing.
With a snap out, like little killer knife from his belt.
Still one of my favorite go-to moments from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Where?
Wait, really?
But they did one of the interstitial like host segments where they're like, oh, you know all those sayings that you think someone said and it turns out that they never really said it. So it's like, oh, well, you know he never says, beam me up, Scotty. It was like, oh, yeah, he never says, play it again, Sam, you know, so on and so forth. And then Crow goes, wait, so Sting in the movie Dune did not appear in like little leather underpants and yelled out, I will kill him. And then Joel goes, no, that did happen. Dune, you know, as its own thing is always going to be almost a separate thing to Lynch, and why he's always going to get sort of like lumped into genre work. When I think that there are some of these other guys, you'd like Cronenberg, you need to talk about genre work because he did definitely do it in a weird, strange way, but it was still definitely genre work. Really, Lynch's only thing was Dune. Still, he needs to be remembered. He's a very, very strong voice that has a lot of ripples, I think, going today. And I would not be surprised if you look at something like the dudes who did Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, those guys watched fucking Lynch.
Of course.
And loved him and are also, in my opinion, still doing the same thing. Those guys watched Lynch's, you know, filmography and were like, we're going to do this, but we're going to do this and it's going to be really entertaining. We're going to do this and you're going to be 40 minutes into this movie and you're going to think, oh, this is like a Lynch film. I don't know if it's for me. And then somewhere around the way, they do the things that Lynch doesn't do and they're like, this has to, the audience is going to be here for however long. They make them have a good time.
There's a big punchline at the end
too. Right. Big. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're going to have fun here, no matter how grossed out it makes you or absurd or strange or body horror we're going to get. They were like, yeah, but we're going to throw in some kung fu action. We're going to have some comedy.
Can I tell you,
yeah.
the Daniels, they directed episodes of Skeleton Crew.
Oh, right. On Disney.
Yeah. So go watch Skeleton Crew. We have yet to have, we're gonna have, to discuss have that discussion. That. We're I've been trying to get this guy to get on Skeleton Crew.
Well, and who knows? Maybe that's what we'll do after we come back with these words from Friends.
To Be Continued Fanboy Podcast was also sponsored by Pancake Studios. You know, To Be Continued Fanboy Podcast, we were born here at Pancake Studios, and for the past 5 years, we have called this place home. Pancake Studios has come a long way from offering just audio services. They now offer Dolby Atmos and surround sound mixing, video recording, production and engineering, a full range of photography service, and sound design. It is your one-stop shop media production services. Go to pancakestudios.net. Orphan Guitars. Local friend of the show, Alex, who works at Orphan Guitars, can help you find out what you're looking for, whether vintage or the right musical equipment for your needs. Brand names from Fenders to Gibsons, electric guitars, basses, guitar amps. Just head over to 493 Court Street at orphanguitars.com. You know, John, they've also helped with the community making donations to local soup kitchens in the past. Brooklyn's coolest guitar shop. That's orphanguitars.com.
All right, friends. Firewalk. Thank you, friends.
Firewalk with fire. Hello there.
Hello.
No, he didn't ask me to be here. I was just
walking
around.
Oh, my God, you're right. Like, I can't keep forgetting.
I'm a time traveling.
Uncle Dave appears.
I'm a time traveling FBI cop who doesn't show up on videotape. Or do I show up on videotape?
I need to know that story. I don't know the story and how they managed to rope in David Bowie into Twin Peaks. But it doesn't take that much, does it?
Ed, we're talking about the man that roped Sting into Dune. So the next thing we're going to be talking about is we will be talking about the Fantastic Four teaser trailer.
Right. We literally just watched it.
John did. The moment it came out, we were like back and forth with it.
You set the tone because
there was a teaser for this teaser. This what we were at. What John just saw and what we saw a couple of days ago that was released is the teaser for the trailer that will be dropped during the Super Bowl. God, what time?
Fantastic Four First Steps. Okay, in the Super Bowl, which is on the 9th, I believe, which is this weekend, you know. And again, go Birds.
Once again. When did we become a sports podcast?
Well, you know, John and I are always Sunny in Philadelphia fans. And
you're on with Iron Age.
What is that bird song that they sing? The address, I forget what that's called. But like, you know, but again, it's like, go Jalen Hurts. We have faith in you. It's time to stop Mahomes and Kelsey. Even though we love you, Kelsey, you know you fight the good fight. But
NFL, proud sponsor of TBC.
Dude, seriously,
actually or not.
We can't continue talking about this and not get some coin at least.
Do we have some Doritos here that we can probably?
Oh God! But some Budweiser.
Some Budweiser
is David Beckham gonna find his twin brother? The fuck. Anyway, Fantastic Four.
The cast of Seinfeld are going to be pushing on some new product.
So, for a very long time, the Fantastic Four has been percolating as one of the next big properties that is going to come out of Marvel Studios. There was a big stumbling block to that area because they rights to the Fantastic Four and a bunch of the characters that associate with them had been sold off in terms of filmmaking rights to other companies, Fox, who produced a few. There was a Fantastic Four movie that was done by Roger Corman in the 80s.
Oh, dear.
There was a Fantastic Four that was the second iteration of the Fox Fantastic Four that was just like called Fantastic Four Stick or some people were calling it. That it was done by the director of what was that film with the kids with the mental powers that it was.
I'll pull it up.
Anywho, they haven't been able to crack it, and then Marvel was not able to get a shot at it because of these rights issues. Now, once that finally happened, once the Fox and Disney merger, you know, They acquired all the rights back to their characters. There was time allotted for them to be when they could. They couldn't immediately use them. They had to wait a while, but now we're in that point where they can start using these characters again, and they have. They announced Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doom, who, of course, everyone famously knows is the Fantastic Four's arch nemesis.
So yes, Jonathan? Here's the problem with that.
Yeah.
Iron Man has fought and encountered Dr. Doom. What are they going to do? What are they going to do?
Well, not in the MCU. No.
Yeah.
Not in the MCU. That's a whole other thing I will talk about here. But, okay, they got the... And now, for the long... You know, these characters... what are they going to do? Like, what are we going to do with these characters? And now we have two definite things. I think the Fantastic Four is more than just the Fantastic Four. It is, as I said, a bunch of associated characters. And the number one associated character is Dr. Doom. So we have now, what are we going to do with Dr. Doom and the Fantastic Four? And for the longest time, the word on the street was when they were trying to break this for the MCU, for Kevin Feige, was there is a time travel element to this, or there is
multiversal.
A period piece element to this. And there was all, well, they're going to go in the 60s. It's going to be in the 60s. It's going to be in the
60s. That's how you avoid Iron Man.
Okay, I'm going to get to all that. Now, I have never liked that. I am one of these people that does think that, like, hey, you have to update origins anyway. And some of them just, they don't have the out, say, other characters do. Captain America has almost built into his modern day incarnation the idea of, like, well, he was frozen in time. He missed all that time. He is here now. A big part of his character is just that, well, if you're talking about him, you're talking about someone who's like America's past.
Suspended animation.
America's past lives in America's present, right? And all of the problems, the anachronisms, the things that are, you know, that are polar opposites, the hypocrisies, you can get into that. And it's fine. And also the nature of the character has been, it's baked in. So you don't spend any time talking about it too much. You may once in a while, even in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, go like, oh, hey, remember Captain America is like really 100 years old. All right.
Yeah.
Cool beans. But it doesn't eat up all that much time and required all of this like real investment. It's there. It's a thread in his movies. It's a thread in the character. But it doesn't overwhelm anything. I think that this is one of those cases where I was hoping it was not going to be. I was hoping that first trailer would come out and it would be like, nope, they're not doing the 60s thing. But this is the ultimate final blow to any, you know, fantasies I might have about that. And it's like, nope, it's definitely a period piece. The director is Matt Shakman. He's a guy from Sunny in Philadelphia. He's done some Game of Thrones.
WandaVision,
but his biggest thing is for Marvel was he's the WandaVision guy,
which feels like a period.
I'm not happy about that. Then the trailer did give me those vibes, but yeah.
Well, let's hear John. I mean, as you know, you just watched the trailer. I don't know how much you know about Fantastic Four.
Let me tell him the Fantastic Four, okay? Reed Richards is elastic. Sue can fade from sight. Johnny is the Human Torch, and the Thing just likes to fight. Call the foe, Fantastic Four. Don't need no more. That's ungrammatical. Reed Richards is elastic. Sue can fade from sight. Johnny is the Human Torch, and the Thing just likes to fight.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Miguel is doing sort of a.
I'm doing a Trump dance. I gotta admit, I didn't want to, but it just came out.
Okay, so
yes, John.
Jonathan. What do you make of the trailer?
Sorry.
Okay.
I want to see another trailer. It didn't really do much.
Again, it was just a teaser.
Yeah, it was just a teaser.
Right.
I'm intrigued, but I'm not sold. There's nothing really grabbing me.
Have you ever had any like, oh, any inkling of, yeah, the Fantastic Four, they're cool, or at least that, or they even below that, it, which is really just indifference. It's kind of like, yeah, they exist. I mean, they're fine.
At whatever. This point, it just feels like, oh, it might be a cool sci-fi movie. Like, just unrelated to anything. Mm-hmm. I could maybe enjoy
okay.
as that.
Okay, that's, yeah. that's a great observation.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Maybe it doesn't have to be anything more than that.
Any other, you know, feels on how, like, any, like, does it grab you in any way? You said that it doesn't really necessarily.
It didn't really grab me too much.
Okay.
It's not like it's not filled with a bunch of spectacular, like, imagery.
Right.
There's some good imagery. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
There's some, you know, that, yeah. you know, Johnny in the upper atmosphere, mm-hmm. the behind the shot of Galactus. But it is the teaser for another trailer. They're not going to give us everything in this teaser, right?
Let me judge it after I see the trailer.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And by the time anyone's listening to this, that Super Bowl trailer will have already been out. All right. But this is really just, we're talking about like our first real look of any of these characters doing dialogue, doing action, seeing the set design and the costuming and all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So
to me, I just took away, it's a bunch of astronauts that got mutated.
That's right? Pretty much, that's
Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm just going to say that Fantastic Four as a comic book reader, growing up in the 80s and the 90s,
John
Byrne I did read a lot of Fantastic Four, but they were never like, they were not as,
they're not
sexy,
the X-Men.
As X-Men was, right? You know, because again, Fantastic Four being Marvel's first family, property, I guess that's what.
Well, okay, let me break this down for John and for anyone else out there. Okay, there's a reason why this is a big deal for the MCU, for Marvel, yes. Studios. Okay, as we said, the problem is they couldn't produce these movies before. Even though the Fantastic Four are a bedrock of the Marvel comic book universe, but more than that, they are the bedrock. Because Marvel does not exist without the FF.
Yes.
You know, the truth is, people are like, oh, what's the first Marvel character? I think a lot of people might knee-jerk go, oh, Spider-Man, right? Spider-Man. Like, you know, they think, oh, it's Superman, Spider-Man, something. Where it is, no, the Fantastic Four's creation is, you know, it's the creation.
It's Stanley, it really
of,
is Stanley.
Of both Stanley, yeah. You know, and Kirby, you know, as his creative
partner. And it speaks
partner.
To a certain time because it was created back in the 60s, right?
I believe, was it like 62, 63, something
62,
like that?
63. So think about that.
I might be off. The point is, here's what was going on. Comic books had their post-war like downturn, mm-hmm. and superhero books were really, really hit. By the time we get to the late 50s, however, they finally have their upswing. You know, they were like, comic books went down, superhero comic books went down. It was like Western, romance, horror, Archie. That kind of thing. Those sort, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly they were competing up for the space for that. And then the DC like brand goes up like gangbusters, where there's like, let's make new versions of our old characters, a new Flash, a new Green Lantern, set new standards for Superman, set new standards for Batman. And they're selling, and it's like suddenly DC's selling comic book superhero stuff, and it's hot. So the people at Marvel are all like, well, thank God we have all these older characters and we can do kind of the same thing, can't we? And Stan Lee was their go-to Johnny on the spot, creative guy, and essentially that was, he was given the orders. Here's the problem. Stan Lee had, I don't want to say delusions, but he had, he had what's the word? Pretensions. He had pretensions of being a great novelist, okay? And he really, he had, this was steady work. You gotta remember, this is stuff he had started the shit in the Depression, so like he wanted to keep his job. But he hated his job. He was kind of like,
He's ready to throw in the towel. And his wife says, he's like, listen, why don't you just go do the things you want to do, write the things you want to write.
And if they fire you, they fire you. You were going to quit anyway.
And he comes up with, like, you know, not just the Fantastic Four, but a bunch of other stuff as well.
And the thing was about it was this. The comic book that had really caught what was to become Marvel Comics, because I don't think they were even Marvel Comics at that point, was that DC was like, oh, we're recreating the Justice Society and we're putting a new coat of paint on it. We're calling it the Justice League. And, you know, all the kids can get a comic book with Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman all together. And, you know, it's all the great heroes of the world. It's the Knights of the Round Table, right?
And that's what they wanted him to produce. I would not be surprised if there even was like a, hey, just go through our archives, pick, you know, four or five of the older heroes that we have. We'll do an update on them and just throw them together.
Stan Lee, what does he do? He takes the four Asian elements and he basically gives each one of them a character.
I'm sorry, Ed. Right? Repeat that one more time.
Asian I'm Stan Lee.
No.
The Asian elements.
Just the information. Asian elements. So Asian elements like invisibility.
No.
You mean the ancient element of invisibility and stretchiness.
Water, wind, fire, and earth.
Right. Right. Okay.
Those are.
I get fire. I get earth.
Hey, there's a reason why.
I don't understand where stretchy and invisible equals the other things. But fine. No, continue it.
So that's what he comes up with. And he gives each one of them a character.
But more importantly than anything, mm-hmm. What did I say was the Justice League? They were the Knights of the Round Table. They're the best of the best of the best. And they're all super professional, hands on their hips. Good job, Aquaman.
But instead, good job.
Instead,
Superman. Stan Lee gave us the nuclear family.
And that's exactly
in more right. ways than one. Yes, it was radiation exposure, but family is precisely what he did.
The prototype to Vin Diesel.
Now, let me.
So are you saying that he should have been
Stan
the thing?
Lee.
He should have been the thing. Is that what you're saying? That's what I'm hearing.
Now, let me give you my take on. You know, with what we just saw with the teaser trailer. First off, it wasn't as sexy as X-Men reading growing up in the 80s and 90s, right? You know, but the Fantastic Four were always there, right? They were always the bedrock there, you know. Even before that, even like in the 70s, wasn't 70s, late 70s, they came up with a cartoon specifically, The Thing. Ring, ring, do your thing. Someone had decided, you know what, we're going to give you a character that people really...
Like before Wolverine, here's a character from a team that we're spinning off into his own thing here for Marvel. And it worked! While that cartoon might not have been the greatest thing or lasted long, The Thing did become...
Yes.
He had his own
thing.
Own title that was separate from Fantastic Four.
It was always like, who could win in the fight, The Hulk or The Thing, which we know, you and I, we know that's just a nonsensical... Yeah. Right, nonsensical argument, right? You know, fanboy stuff. But the Fantastic Four were always there doing something in underneath everything. As we got older, look, She-Hulk replaces Thing.
They have a kid.
They have a kid, you know, who is also a mutant.
Is also a mutant, so that links him to the X-Men stuff. You know, so, you know, God knows that might also be
doing the MCU. Without Fantastic Four, a lot of things. We would not have gotten things like, you know, Rick and Morty, you know, for one thing.
But, you know, the Fantastic Four being a hit at the time makes a lot of sense because back then we were in the middle of the space race.
Well,
yes. Cold War.
Well, which is very interesting.
All right,
so
this gets into... Absolutely.
So it's like Americans going to space.
Let me finish up my thing first.
Yeah, sorry.
So I get to watch this thing, you know, and it is a risk. It is a huge risk, but they are, who do they have? They have Pedro Pascal, one of the most, you know.
In-demand guys right now,
you know. And here's the funny thing. Leave it up to an actor like Pedro Pascal to excite you in a role and you don't even see his face in the Mandalorian, right? You know, that's how great of who he is right now.
I love this guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not hating, but is he being overused? Look, Game of Thrones, Star Wars,
Last of Us.
I mean,
you know, now
well, like I said,
four. I'm gonna see four different movies like, with him being in it in the same year. I might be confused.
Joseph Quinn, I had to point out, like this is maybe some months back, right? You know, and I'm telling Miguel, who's being casted in this, and he's like, "Who's Joseph Quinn?"
I had no idea. Who's this?
Don't
guy?
You remember Eddie Munson?
He was like, Eddie
from
and was like
Eddie Munson from Stranger Days.
He was like Stranger right? Things. And I was like, holy sh!
So a guy like. Remember, he owned a summer because of his little like
his Metallica
thing, right? You know, so he's an up and coming actor who's already doing a lot of things.
But also, you laid it on me that I was like, oh, that's cool, right? He's a legit like 18-year-old man. Nope. In Stranger Things, I was like, oh yeah, he's like 18, 19. He's at best like 18, 19.
Isn't it crazy that he said this? The thing that they spin off is a thing show. Then he said, a guy from Stranger Things.
Yep.
And it's a thing on the show.
Okay. Vanessa Kirby is already one of these established actresses. I first saw her as Princess Margaret in The Crown. Yes, I did watch The Crown. But she also took up a bunch of other roles. She was also in Hobbs and Shaw. She was most recently, in my opinion, a movie that I didn't like, but that I kind of really kept watching over and over, which is in Napoleon, where she plays Josephine. She is a classically trained actor, right? You know, and I'm going to get to them. It's a risk, but it's a calculated risk. And then finally, the one that really grabs me very emotionally, because The Bear is one of those shows that I ended up putting on and I couldn't stop watching it. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Bear fans are...
I'm a huge Bear fan. And Emmy Award-winning Eben Moss-Bachrach is one of those things that just jumps at you, okay? And for him to be, no pun intended, the bedrock to this team, right, is a very calculated risk on Kevin Feige's part. Because, look, at the end of the day, this might be released and no one would watch it. I think it will be a hit. Will it be a billion-dollar hit? I'm not certain. We as Marvel MCU.
I think there's a lot of anticipation.
There's anticipation.
I think there's a lot of anticipation.
It can easily go
500 million.
But think about it, like, you know, in the history of Fantastic Four movies.
But it's not a good track record.
It's not a great track record,
And their highs, even in the comic books, have had long stretches of mediocrity in between.
Yeah.
But there have been a lot of times where it's like, they're almost grandfathered in, where like, it's like, hey, it's the year, I don't know, it's the year 1991. Mm-hmm. We have to do a big crossover. Are we going to include the Fantastic Four? Their sales aren't really doing that great right now. It's like, well, we got it. They're, you know, again, because they literally are the beginning of Marvel. They have this.
So they petered out.
No one ever wants to like abandon them.
But that's it. Like watching the trailer in of itself, it's sort of, I'm looking at this CGI thing, Eben Moss-Bachrach.
And robot with a tape recorder in it.
I'm going to tell you, compared, like I saw like someone on social media do like, you know, it's basically
their own deep fake thing.
It's like, what's the name of, the Shield, the guy from the Shield who was also, Ben Grimm.
Oh, yeah. Just
like the different Ben Grimms that we get,
the commish. Yeah.
Right. This thing is perhaps the most comic accurate.
In terms of looks,
right? And then also they have Herbie the Robot too, right? You know, they're really going and trying to accomplish something here. When we get to see Johnny flame on, it looks pretty. You know, it kind of reminds me of the way they used to draw, like in the Golden Age.
Oh, right? Yeah, there's without a doubt, there's a lot of Kirby aesthetic in some of these
yeah,
things.
You know, what we don't see is...
I honestly think that there's an aspect of it, like that behind the shot of Galactus and sort of the deal, you know...
Small Galactus.
I don't know why you keep saying small if he's towering over the Statue of Liberty. That's, you know...
But it's like, oh, here's the head of Galactus and he's looking at the Statue of Liberty. Now, that said, it may very well be, I'm looking at a screen, Galactus is looking at a viewer screen.
I don't know. How much bigger do you want him to be?
He's a fucking freaking planet eater, dude, you know? I mean, he should be really big.
Yeah, Ed, they fought him on top of a skyscraper in his first appearance. That's the comic. He's on top of a skyscraper. Dude, that's how big he is.
I was 5 years old, and the old cartoon came on. Remember, he's holding the nullifier.
Yeah.
And Galactus is trying to like step on them, but Sue's got her like little. She's got the bubble over him, you know.
But what I'm saying about the what I'm going to get to is, I think that a big part of the aesthetic is going to be, as you said, the robot with the tape deck is going to be a retro future thing. Where it's going to be, the aesthetic is going to be if this were an actual film made in the 60s, maybe not on the level of, obviously the special effects are going to be modern special effects CGI, but like design wise, we saw that it's going to be, if this were made in 1964, what would Hollywood in 1964 do with these characters, do with the set design, do with things like their logo and all those, you know, what is their, yeah, I think they're probably going to, and I think they, as much as I don't like the 90s, I do. That's creative. That's like could be very, very fun.
But I'll, going back to my point, which is I am, if the thing is going to be the thing that grounds the this team, right? You know, and they've got the actors to portray these characters, and I think I'm getting really revved up and excited for this, you know, again, for something that I thought was just like, you know, it's a Fantastic Four. They're always there, you know, but
I have to say, I did not like how Galactus was looking at the Statue of Liberty.
So he's going to get me too'd.
He's going to.
Galactus is going to get me too'd.
Is it a Ghostbuster 2, like a, you know, like Statue of Liberty? That's
we one thing we didn't mention
at the end. Right, I don't know if you guys noticed, but his giant hand was towards the back.
When you're a planet eater, they just let you do whatever.
grab him by
the crowd, grab him by the torch.
So I'm getting really excited for this. Especially when you know what they get right? There's a scene in the trailer where Ben Grimm is looking at you know, like pictures of himself as in human form on TV. And then he sees a reflection from the, and that is Ben Grimm.
Ben Grimm. I think that there's some people I've heard who like found the voice a little off-putting at first.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. They're doing something different. And they're doing something different. They don't want to repeat things that have
been. He's supposed to sound like this from the Ancestry.
He's always been a barrel voice, very bare voice, kind of a little piccolo.
I used to be really hot. Yeah. No, ugly.
Right. Okay. And right.
Thanks, Kimish.
I think that a nice little inversion is, in fact, maybe making him soft spoken. And that might put a more accent on the tragedy of this guy. Yeah.
What they should have done was use Michael Jackson's voice.
Don't be ignorant. I'm still pretty. I just gotta look down in the inside. Dr. Doom,
you're devilish.
The monkey rent. The monkey rancher.
You're so devilish, Dr. Doom.
In his jail cell, had doo-doo feces all over the walls.
Galactus, if you don't... Galactus, have some Jesus juice before you eat the planet.
By the way, Captain EO is a part of canon now. Part of Star Wars canon.
That's true. I also want to put one thing we didn't mention. When he said, I don't like the way he was looking at the Statue of Liberty. This version of Galactus does have a female Silver Surfer.
I was just going to bring that up.
Uh-oh. So
Julia Gardner.
That's an HR nightmare.
Julia Gardner of Ozark, by the way, very gifted actor, is a female Silver Surfer. And I'm like, oh, okay. Let's just, they're really.
Quite a number of people upset.
Whatever.
Silver Surfer was androgynous to begin with.
He doesn't have. Granted, he has no genitals or nipples or anything.
His name is Nord Rad.
He's a Ken doll. He's flat down there. That said, even though people are upset. I would love to have a classic Nord Rad in the MCU too, but they gave us a classic Silver Surfer in Rise of the Silver Surfer, that Fantastic Four. Now, it wasn't a good movie, but you can't look at that version of the Silver Surfer and not say, they nailed it. It just wasn't a good movie. It was like, and so it's like, there was a classic version. If you ever want to see that version, you can watch that film. There is a new version, and this is going to be the one that's going in, at least for right now. Don't get your panties in a twist just because it's a chick. It doesn't matter. And anyway, the Norrin Rad as a character... Everything about the Silver Surfer, nothing about it is female.
The Silver Surfer doesn't wear clothing anyway. It's not like she's going to wear a skirt, right?
Yeah.
That said, there are rumors on whether there's going to be a Council of Reed, which would mean that they would have to rope back in John Krasinski, Ian Gruffold,
and
the guy from
Whiplash.
Whiplash?
Yeah, that he was the Reed Richards from that Fantastic.
Okay, and all
don't
right.
Don't forget about Asian Nicole. John Krasinski.
Like I saw somewhere. Honestly, honestly,
why not?
Honestly,
why not?
Honestly, if like Krasinski's Reed Richards is standing right next to
Randall Park as Reed Richards.
Randall Park, right? And like one of his the two they're like two versions of Sue, and like they go to the different one, and they're like, "Oh, you're not my Reed. I couldn't tell you apart." See, well, I was saying
we don't know. Well, like that would say there's a yeah. We would continue to speculate what the post credit scene would be, but like whether Doom is going to appear on this right. or not,
and this we got to talk about then. Yeah, again, RDJ as Doom.
Yeah.
All right, I want to. That's my jumping off point for my issues. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's my thing. We have RDJ announced as
Doom,
as Dr. Doom.
Chris Evans, who by at this point has refuted and has said,
has been Johnny
"I'm retired.
I'm retired.
But
retired.
Who knows?
Who knows? We'll see that. That no, seriously, that Captain America post credit scene.
Yeah.
If you don't think Steve Rogers might show up, I would not bet against it completely. All right. You have, I know that they're all into the variants, and that's going to be their explanation for Dr. Doom. Here's my thing, similar to setting the Fantastic Four in the 60s and then either having them come over to the mainline MCU timeline or mainline MCU universe, if it's not just an alternate time, but literally an alternate reality. Here's my problem. It adds absolutely nothing necessary, and unfortunately requires that now you have to reference on some level that these are four people from fucking 1964 living in the modern day. And if you don't, that's bad because you're not doing good continuity. And if you do, it's bad because you're eating up time. You could be doing something far more interesting with these characters. I don't think you need to make them. Here's the thing.
What if?
Okay, yes, John.
What if it's just a jump off point? What if, like, by the end of the movie,
right? Yeah, they're
travel to
right. They're in
present day.
Right, fine.
Maybe
it's still the same thing because at some point, still in that movie, you have to get into the like, oh, the world is different, and then for every appearance after until it's hammered into the audience's head, they're going to have to always do some fucking reference to like, oh, what do you like? That swinging 60s music, Dino, whatever, blah, blah, like, no, we don't need that. And also was already done with another character, Captain America. Why are we retreading that with four characters? I don't think it adds anything. And then you have is this going to be a la Deadpool and Wolverine, where it's going to be like, well, I know we're advertising this as a Marvel movie. It's kind of actually to the side. It's an MCU movie side. And then we get into Doom. We know Doom is going to be the main villain going forward. They didn't bring our RDJ back to be a supporting cast guy, right?
Although there are some rumblings that Jonathan Majors might be brought back.
Fine.
Tie in some loose ends.
Fine. But we know that they're going to give the shine to Doom. Here's the thing. The Dr. Doom Reed Richards rivalry is one of the most, it's up there. It's Batman Joker. It's Spider-Man and the Green Goblin. It's Superman and Lex Luthor. All right. It is epic because it's the smartest man in the world versus a guy who is almost as smart.
To understand.
And who is also the great, incredible villain.
To understand the Reed Richards and Victor Von Doom rivalry dynamic, go watch Adventure Brothers as a sort of anecdotally flashback to the
deconstruct
days. Deconstruct it.
They deconstruct the whole idea. As I said, it all comes.
They're college buddies and it's college roommates.
It all comes down to, Doom, again, Doom is trying to use science to contact the dead. And Reed Richards comes over
this equation is like kind of...
A, that's fucking insane. And B, your math is off.
Okay, gotta go to a pep rally.
I gotta go pep rally right now. I'm like, well, I'll show this fucker my math's off. And then we're off to the races. But it's more that it is a big rivalry. It is very important. So what does this mean if the FF are from another timeline/universe? Doom is also from that timeline universe?
Doom is going to have to time travel with them.
And that's the, again, so now, again, we're overcomplicating these things, right? Why can't it just be the Fantastic Four here? No, they, for whatever reason, that whole, two things, the whole, they were the first, they were like, oh, we didn't honor that in because of the way things shook out for us. I wish they had been there for our first movie. I wish instead of the Iron Man, it had been like, I'm sure that that's part of it. And I also think that something about doing a period superhero movie, it's the one thing that was consistently, whenever we heard rumors about the rewrites or, oh, there's this director's loss, but was that this is the, for whatever reason, they fucking love this concept. And I am more than willing to eat my words if I watch this movie and I go, fuck it, they were right. Like this element and what they did, it pulled it off. They did it well. It added. But right now, my issue is, I don't, and I'm going to get, lastly, a lot of great imagery in that trailer. It does a lot of good things. However, the Shackman-ness of it, the WandaVision-ness of it all.
The Pixar.
It gave me super WandaVision vibes in terms of everything from line readings to the set design and other things. And I am deeply and well known on record as having fucking loathe that goddamn show. And I do not know about what this guy's sensibilities are going to be doing not only the FF, but this period piece part of it. I did not enjoy any of the, what he did with that, those aspects on WandaVision. And it seems he got this based on WandaVision. So for me, the next trailer, that Super Bowl trailer, better blow me away. And everything I see coming out until it comes out has got to be like, yeah, okay, it's solid. This is good. I'm going to be happy. Otherwise, I think I just feel opening day, I'm going to be like, I don't know what I'm getting.
I just feel that as a fan, you know, it's, and also the actors that they've hired to cast these characters. I think we're going to get some really awesome performances overall. I mean, for
I think that that sell that this part idea of the teaser, that part of the teaser was right. Good. The performances
to sell this idea as no, we are a family. We're going to deal with it together. That whole like you know, it's and also a lot of other names that are just tossed around, like John Malkovich. We have no idea who he is. Yeah,
just a flash of him.
I saw his face.
A flash. It's like, what's going on?
You and I were back.
Speculation. Oh, maybe he's the Red Ghost or whatever. And it was like, right. Well, what if he's Nathaniel Richards?
The father, not the
father.
Son.
And we're going to get something along on who that knows? Level.
You know, like, but let's see what happens in the next few days.
And look, the Fantastic Four are ripe to do great things in the MCU. I want to see them. I do think. This is a spectacular cast that easily could do this in their sleep if given the right material, if given the right directions. I think that that's the last part of that where I'm going to go like, I'm worried. I am not worried about any of those actors being able to pull off some good version of those characters. And yeah, the small things we saw, like again, the little bit of, you know, Ben Grimm being the guy who's like obviously has the biggest burden, but he still wants to be a little upbeat. He's doing like the whole like, I just want to be a regular guy here in the kitchen.
Because let's say that down the line.
They seem to be nailing some of that.
Let's say down the line that, you know, you get to see these characters in other things, you know, whether it's the next Avengers movie or whatever.
Secret Wars.
To see the Thing and the Hulk like go mano a mano. I mean, are you kidding me?
Not only that. I know some people, there's a you know friend of the show, Matt Sulkowski, who does not like Mark Ruffalo as Hulk. But this casting of Ben Grimm with Ruffalo's Hulk, you can fucking do something with that shit.
Yeah.
I am sorry. And it could if you want to give me, like, I get it. Some people don't like Professor Hulk. So fine, give me the Thing Hulk team up movie, which is about him becoming Savage Hulk again.
Yeah,
like it's like, hey buddy, we gotta.
Well, it's like
I definitely can see those two guys playing off each other.
We see the broad strokes. It's like you know this is destined to happen, right? Hulk and Thing on screen. Oh, I mean, can you? I mean, think about
at least before Ruffalo totally ages out, they got it. Like that actually would it would
think of the synergy.
I mean, it is.
I don't. I'm just one of these voices that's like, I don't know if I ever saw Reed Richards and Pedro Pascal. right? But Pedro Pascal is just one of those guys. It's just like, you know, you can.
He's very chameleonic.
Yeah,
he can pull off. You
know, he was Max Lord, and I'm like,
I think that one of the things that he should bring to this role, and you see a little bit of it, is he has to be both fatherly. But also,
he is internet daddy.
He also a little on. Reed Richards is also not hip.
Right,
he's a square guy.
Right,
like this is not Tony Stark.
Yeah,
and above all, that did make me very happy when I saw that teaser. I was like, oh, thank God they aren't just gonna make him fucking, you know, best value fucking Tony Stark. It's going to be like, oh, okay, he has his own vibe, his own way of acting and his own dynamic, because this isn't just some one guy in his own one-man operation. This is a guy who's like, this is my wife, my wife's kid brother, and my best friend. We live together. Like, it's all. Overall, I voice what I voice, it does do a lot of things very good. And I do think the money is up on the screen, because that, like I said, that production value is not cheap to do, you know, you said just, you know, set dressing one place is takes forever, even with all the modern day technology. And then to do, you know, a 2-hour movie of that, it's all up there on the screen. I just hope that the things that I am worried about don't overwhelm the aspects that do look like they kind of have at least a good, like, oh yeah, yeah, that's. Yeah, that's a good start. That's a great start. So,
well, you know, we'll see in Super Bowl Sunday, you know, and
we'll see.
Birds of War. Until and then so let's hear some friends and we'll be back.
Charlie, we pissing cans.
I love our logo. No, really. I love our logo. The To Be Continued Fanboy Podcast logo was provided to us by friend of the show, Matt Sulkowski, who also runs MSD Studios. And what does Matt do at MSD Studios? He provides positive reinforcement for your brand. Located in Philadelphia, Matt has worked with clients of all sizes and has helped them to focus on designs for campaigns, rebrands, and new brands. Get in touch for your next project. MSD Studios, that's MSDstudios.com.
One, two, three, four. Miguel, are you? Oh, it wasn't you. That was a coffee maker.
I saw this koala. This dark mountain.
Oh, there it goes again. That's a coffee maker.
I'm dead again.
He's dead again. We're back.
But not after we have some delicious, apparently, Batman coffee.
Batman.
Jonathan,
this episode is sponsored by Batman coffee.
Jonathan is making some espresso with this noisy coffee maker that sounds like it's having cardiac arrest.
You know why? It draws so much electricity that it... That this power conditioner.
You know what it does? Okay, I'm going to describe this to the audience. That piece of appliance can easily, like, go in MSK, like Mystery Science
Theater 3000. It might be Tom Servo's long lost brother. Tom Servo. If it started singing like all of the theme songs from 1970s detective shows, I would not be surprised. So anyway, welcome. Okay,
it's time to go back to, Ninja 3 to Domination. We're going to end up watching the movie. Right.
Movie sign!
You guys don't drink coffee, but doesn't that smell amazing?
It does smell really good.
I can drink coffee.
But here's the question, is that what Batman's ass smells like?
What?
Because if you look at the cup, no, on the other side, and it's like, that's right, behind me, all this coffee.
You mean the Val Kilmer ass?
Yes.
Val Kilmer, like when it turns and then you see like Val Kilmer's like, you know.
This is why Superman works alone.
You see his throat box thing?
This is also why Superman works alone.
Okay, we're
sense of Val Kilmer, you know, unfortunately. All right,
back to the assignment, people. Back to the assignment.
This is why Val Kilmer works alone. Anyway, yes, we're I think we're gonna double up, and we'll talk about the Brave New World release and Daredevil very quickly. I'm trying to remember if we talked about Brave New World last time. I know we'd seen it. I know
we watching, and I forget if we got around to talking. I think we did, but we're very close to the release. I just want to reiterate this thing about it. They're short stroking adamantium all over the place with the ads. There's all of this sort of the Red Hulk mania. Everyone's, oh, what's going to happen with this fight? Oh, it's cool to see.
Red Hulk mania and adamantium.
Hey, Chewie, any of that gamma radiation over there?
I'm putting my shit down on a 50-50 that this thing absolutely tanks. That there's a 50% chance it tanks for this one reason. I honestly, and I've joked about this to you before, but I believe it. I think that there's not a non-zero chance that the American public in general is not going to be down with this Captain America movie. I think that...
Especially with the stuff that he's like that Mackie has said, and okay, there's some kind of backlash.
I think that the...
Even though Chris Evans is pretty much said the same thing.
All the same stuff. No, but I think it's more like this. It's like, I don't know if... I'll just be point blank, you know, about the politics of it. I don't know if the anti-Trump people in America right now feel very good about going to a movie and spending money on something called Captain America. Mm-hmm. And I think the simple fact that you have a black Captain America is not appealing to the MAGAs. And they will make a point of, we're not going to see that. So I think even if this is really good, which I think is very much a possibility, I think it might get effed over in the box office. I think that there may be some people will be like, I don't know. And it doesn't. And also because it doesn't have the added extra, like every Thunderbolts commercial we have seen so far, right, has been comedy, comedy, comedy. You're going to have a great time. It's going to be so much fun. This movie is going to be so funny and so fun. And every single Captain America, you know, Brave New World ad is like, you're going to get the Manchurian candidate here. This is going to be about the war for the soul of America. And like, I don't know if the country, I think the country's like, we're living that. So I don't know if I want to spend my money.
Some of the tracking has said, you know, that it's bound to make good money, but it's not going to be like a $1 billion movie. You know, like maybe we'll touch upon 600-700.
Yeah,
who knows?
It might level off somewhere. Yeah, level off somewhere. Yeah,
you know what?
Which you better hope, these days expectations have been adjusted.
Yes. Yes.
It might be that they're like, look, this makes seven. If it comes in spinning at range of 800, we're happy.
Yeah.
Could very well be that happens.
One thing that people aren't really talking about is like, and we, it's not that we haven't seen before, this is a Harrison Ford movie too, you know, and we've already, well, look, we're in this age where we say all the time, Harrison Ford doesn't need to be Indiana Jones anymore, right? He's okay. He proved it. Even when he goes on junkets, when he goes on talk shows, he's that guy's like, oh, I don't know about Star Wars anymore, right?
You know, movie, I don't know.
You know, like they make this joke, algorithms on always, my YouTube.
It's always, I'm here, but I don't want to be here.
The algorithms on my YouTube, which is like, he's on Conan O'Brien. And, you know, how many times have we seen him toss Jordan Schlansky's Millennium Falcon on the floor, right? You know, and him on Jimmy Kimmel.
On Kimmel, yeah.
Yelling at Chewbacca, right? You know,
she was my wife.
He's that guy who's like, you know, so tell us, Harrison, what do you think about Han Solo? Like, I don't think anything about Han Solo.
Right, yeah. It's so, like, you know, so here's the thing. He seemed to have gone out of his way to do this movie.
The last thing I saw was like Harrison Ford wants to be Red Hulk going on continually. And I'm like, really?
He's 80.
He's 80 years old. You know,
Well, once more, as I keep pointing out, I think this movie was written way before Kamala Harris entered it.
Yeah.
They were all like, oh, this is going to be funny. We're going to get fucking, you know, Joe Biden's going to win this in a romp. Trump's not winning this. And we're going to have this whole funny thing about Harrison Ford's 80-year-old president, just like our actual president. And, oh, secretly, he's a super hyper radiated monster with all this energy. Ha, 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 ha.
But that's not to say that, you know.
Ha, 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 ha And none of that happened.
That's not to say that the
but it makes sense that Harrison Ford wants to be Red Hulk forever, because he could be in the movie in a quarter of the time he's Harrison Ford, and then the rest of the time he's CGI.
Right, yeah. He doesn't actually have
so
to do
anything. He doesn't have to do a lot of work.
One begs, though, like, you know, like, are we supposed to hate General President Ross?
Do we even know what the plot is? Also, since apparently
adamantium,
word on the street also was there were massive rewrites of including stuff like Carlos Esposito's character suddenly just getting dropped in the middle of the film.
And I don't know if you guys heard, but maybe you said this while I was using the restroom. But Anthony Mackie came out and said, "No, the president is not based on
Trump." I brought it up before. Yeah. Basically, what he said is no different than what Kevin Chris Evans has already said, and yet, you know, people are like, "Yeah, Chris Evans, because he's, you know, he's white Captain America," and meanwhile, black Captain
America. Well, let's just say that Mackie was gonna catch more flack. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like that. Chris Evans doesn't catch flack from MAGAs. He does, because he's very adamant about his politics and his worldview.
We are slowly and surely, but
got
seeing
other issues.
We have slowly and surely, but have seen. Kind of images of the leader portrayed by Tim Blake Nelson, which you gave a whole dissertation on our last show about how stupid of a character the leader is, and I'm in agreement. That said, it is an opportunity for them to retool this character to pull the strings, because
The leader's origin is dumb as fuck. The leader is a cool villain.
I was a janitor.
Hey, maybe I can open this can of radioactive material and profit. I don't. Anyway, but yeah, you got that. What other? We don't know if Mark Ruffalo is in this or not. We don't know what other, you know, whatever things.
Whether Liv Tyler's going to be.
I said they're short stroking. They're short stroking the idea of adamantium, because I think they know that it has enough. Like, they're not saying adamantium in commercials because they think that is going over the head of the normies at this point. People know adamantium, and they know adamantium equals Wolverine at some point down the line. So this, you know,
we see Captain America slicing through fighter jets with his wings, right?
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah, but that his is
they could say that that's vibranium, that's Wakandan bullshit. Okay, you know. But yeah, we basically have this sort of like, okay, this is the big serious Marvel movie, because like I said, it's not being pushed the way Thunderbolts is. And it's the sort of thing where it's like, okay, this is probably also where we're going to do all of our, like, there are going to be like five or six things that you have to pay attention to in this movie, because it's laying the seeds for going forward, because I think the Cap movies have always been more serious and the stakes have always had to feel a little more, you know, less. He has less quips to fall back on as a character. And I think as an expectation, no one wants Captain America to be Spider-Man and just be like joke. And they did good with his trilogy of making them much more serious, much more action drama oriented than most of the other output.
Can I say though, like, you know, and I've said this on record on the show, Sam Wilson, the Falcon, will always be one of my favorite Avengers of all time. I've never quite met, maybe because you and I are
he's your Marvel Nightwing. That's why you like
it. For a lot of, but it's just something about he is the sidekick of sidekicks, but like with a really badass, like Techno Wings, right? You know, but it's just a character. He's a loyal character at the same time. You know, he's always been by Cap's side. You and I are older, and this notion of, they've given Sam the shield, which was, I suppose, a natural course of action,
especially in the MCU.
But I've never considered Sam as the captain, right? Yeah, I love the idea that he is Captain America, because that's a whole issue of challenges that
just
he's
say
overcome.
That you're against DEI and get it over with. Ed, just put on the fucking red hat already, all right, man.
Marvel defunds Chris Evans.
But like, you know, but this movie will, you know, again, for him to have the nanotech helmet and the wings are now, you know, they're just, they basically took Wakanda technology and he supersized it.
It is a thing. I do think, this gets into some of my issues with updating and certain things. Like, I don't know. I happen to not have a problem with Mackie as a performer. I think I get why he is, you know, where he is. It's the thing. It's like
a thin line between badass and cheese. Right?
There's a little bit of that. And he does walk that line. Mm-hmm. I think my thing is this. It's like my whole issue with Iron Man and nanotechnology. I have a conception of the character, and even if you're going to make someone else that character, even if you're going to throw a lot of wrinkles, maybe new powers, maybe new whatever setup, there still has to be some aspect that feels like it belongs, it's appropriate. For me, I never like nanotechnology and Tony Stark mixing because he's called Iron Man. And when I think Iron Man, I literally think heavy nuts iron and bolts. I think of something, I think of solid state technology. I don't think of anything in which he's going to start talking like Star Trek: The Next Generation, like technobabble, like we got to reverse the polarity on the nanites. To blah, blah, blah. Like I don't think. I think he's like I build thing work. I don't know.
I think your issue is it's too much of a MacGuffin.
It's too much is the thing. It's like I don't know if we're doing this character.
He has an answer for any situation now because of technology.
There are
fewer limitations.
Right.
I have my pros and cons.
Miguel, your explanation since the days of Endgame has always been like, when did he become Green Lantern?
Yeah, it's like there have to be, and that's the whole thing about Marvel characters. And Marvel's whole thing has always been, hey, our guys are the underdogs. We're not gods, except when we actually are gods like Thor. But again, other than those guys, it is Ensor. And my thing is,
so
when you.
Playing within the
so the idea of Captain America has.
Unlimited tech.
Just even Captain America has wing rig. Like, don't get me wrong. Here's the thing. Like, what if I put on the Infinity Gauntlet like Thanos, and I snap my fingers, and I change history and reality, and I say, I go back in time to fucking Jack Kirby, and I tell him, hey, you know, what if this guy flew? What if he had, like, a pair of wings? And that's just how Captain America has always been, right? And you go, you can look at that and go, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, American Eagle, he has wings. Yeah, that could work. But that isn't what it was. Captain America is super soldier, uses shield, is not like Hulk level strong thing. If he could take out a tank, he does it creatively. He can't muscle it.
We had
this is the thing, when you have like Falcon flying his wings through a jet fighter, I go, I don't know if that's Captain America per se for me.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why.
What is passing the baton?
Sam,
things haven't changed.
Sam Wilson, Captain America has always been kind of weird for me. You know, it's like, what are the limitations to this? Now, that said.
And also, sort of the weirdness of the design. It's one thing, like, it would be one thing if it was like, Steve can no longer be Captain America. But the shield is also lost. Here's Sam. Here's the new, like, eagle outfit. You were Falcon. Now you're Captain America. But you're using this eagle theme, right? You know? But you don't get the shield because it's too busy. You're an artist, right?
Yeah.
It's very busy being, here are the defining aspects of me with these wings, but also the iconography of the shield on top of it. You just have all this, like, how
I
does
it I came with
fight?
This one big question. It's like, throughout the whole, like, throughout the different designs of Sam Wilson, he's always had a pair of goggles. Like, what's with the pair of goggles? There's a scene, and we've seen this in Dorito commercials, you know, whatever, where he lands, the wings retract, and the nanotech helmet goes back, and it's Sam with the goggles.
Right. Yeah.
What's with the goggles? Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, you yourself have always pointed out, you're like, well, what are we doing super soldier wise with Sam? Will he get enhanced to powers? Is the reason they're gonna like justify him flying through planes that, oh, he got super soldier like beefed up and this really cool armor, and that's why? Because you do, like, there is a sort of like, let me just say this, how does physics work exactly with, I am in my wingsuit, I am flying with the shield,
How do I generate the twist, the power to like make the shield anything? Like, I get you can use it defensively, but like, how can he throw the shield when he's like in midair and like it has to be faster than like he's throwing? There's all sorts of
200 miles an hour.
Yeah, there are all these sort of like there've always been those questions. Now again, I'm not reflexively against Sam his character, and I think that they did. There's something I have not been happy that they didn't James Bond it. Like, they didn't just be like, look, these actors are not the characters. The characters are the focus. So, hey, RDJ didn't want to do Iron Man anymore. That's fine. We're putting Iron Man up on the shelf for a little bit, but we're not killing him. We're bringing him back at some later date with a different actor. Just know that we do that. They chose not to do that. They chose to make it very like tied up. So,
however,
I get that why this is like it's kind of brave, and then like especially Black Captain America, our current political climate.
It's also a jumping.
There's a lot point. To recommend all, to, that, all, that could be very good about.
It's this. Also a jumping point. We've already at this point seen they've promoted where President Ross says, "Sam, I want you to restart the Avengers," right? I'm like, oh wow, okay, so this is it. This is Sam is gonna at this point, he's gonna go and then restart the Avengers, the Avenger program, or whatever it's called, right? You know. Which is why I mean we've already know that Doomsday is already slated.
Right.
Secret War.
Could we be seeing a I guess they already did that for the Infinity Saga. I was thinking, could we see like two different groups, a Avengers Underground Avengers,
kind of like X-Men Gold and Blue.
Well, even more to go into the fact, like that Bendis run, where it was like, hey, here are the new Avengers, led by at first Captain America, and then like Luke Cage with all the Spider-Man, and all that, and they're the underground guys trying to figure out this conspiracy, and then there's the face front Mighty Avengers, which in fact were like
we already got,
and then they became a villain team, and that's their Thunderbolts.
Shang-Chi, Mark, Bruce Banner is out there. Yeah. Carol is out there. Wong, listen, everything is Mark. The MCU means is basically Wong's. Construct.
It's Wong's world, baby.
It's Wong's world. That's what it is.
We're all just living in it.
Then you have like some of the younger characters.
We got the Clint is out there.
Clint, both.
We got two Hawkeyes. Potentially.
Two Hawkeyes.
The Guardians are still milling about, right?
Yeah, but they're not. They're not Avengers.
No. But again, they could be pulled into like whatever Avengers story. And again, Ed. No, don't say that. There are tons of characters that were in those movies that when is he ever a fucking Avenger or given this sort of fucking spotlight? So yeah, believe me again. Yeah.
So wait. Is this where what's his name from the golden the one with the gold face?
We were talking about Guardians. Adam Warlock.
Yeah. So is this that Adam Warlock's like wait. I thought it was an Avenger.
Probably.
No.
Don't write their jokes for them. You're better than this.
One ever called you an Avenger.
But
I'm an Avenger.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, right. They had Rocket Raccoon, and they were like, oh, we got to include this character. He's well popular. He's going to be hanging out with the Avengers. He's practically the Avenger. He's doing all the stuff with the Avengers. They could be, some of these characters might be, being rolled around, into that as well. Look, I love Cap. I love Cap's world. I want to be supportive of Mackie as this, and I'm wondering what exactly are they going to tie these disparate elements together? Why is there an assassination attempt on the president by an original super soldier? What does Adamantium and the Eternals thing have to do with it? Yada yada yada. I'm intrigued. I just do have a feeling that there's not a non-zero chance. This could not go over well, even if it's good. Like, I think that is the real shame. I think it could be a thing where it's just going to be like, it kind of just went to the box office. And when I finally get around to seeing it, it'll be like, well, this is actually really good. Why didn't people watch it? And it'll be like, nah, do you remember what it was like back then? Do you remember how we were all feeling in the months post November? Do you remember that? So, I don't know. Next. Again, the Daredevil Born Again trailer, which
We did it. Save Daredevil. We did it, Joe. We saved it.
This is like, oh my God, Edward.
Edward. a deep and hearty fuck you from the bottom of my heart.
We did it.
You did nothing.
You did nothing
except get caught with your britches down.
Didn't we?
We did it. Yeah. But like, okay. Long time coming, teased in so many different ways.
Too long coming.
You know, last time.
Which you've always called Daredevil the best thing Marvel has ever put out.
That in terms Netflix of, in has ever put out.
But well, it was like Marvel Netflix. It was done. And the thing is that the best thing Marvel ever put out that they had that Kevin Feige had zero hand in.
Mm.
That's the key.
Yes.
It's one of the few times that fucking Jeff Loeb and what's his face? And Ike Perlmutter. You know, in running the Marvel TV studios, the old one,
mm-hmm.
Produced something that, in my opinion, was the streaming equivalent of what the Nolan films were. Really and truly was.
I can't believe you put Perlmutter's name in there.
We can say it now.
We can say it now.
But it's one of these cases where such an amazing, you know, three seasons of a superhero show that nailed what you could do with that character and made it believable, action-packed, you know, emotional, violent.
World building, because they built an entire world.
Right, which got wiped away because of the whole changeover and, oh, we're absorbing this back into Marvel proper. Well, I mean,
in this trailer, we get to see come back.
Well, no.
No, no,
no, no, no.
Right,
no,
again,
no,
that you said, the world building, you know.
Frank Castle,
and then, of course,
which
this,
means
anyone
that,
who's seen this trailer is going to see.
Which means that the dinosaur is still, the dinosaur bones is still, it's still buried underneath Manhattan.
Let's just say.
Can we erase the hand?
Yeah, let's, no, no, no. John, here's the thing. Let's just have a cardboard cutout of Danny Rand show up, and that there literally be a line that says,
"I'm the Iron Fist.
I have to leave now. I have to go back to my home planet." And he slowly gets lifted up out of, and then a title card comes out: "Iron Fist died on the way back to his planet." And we just all move on after that. But no, it was as you said, it was the keystone to all of those Netflix Marvel shows that had their ups and downs.
Serious question. Did this preview reveal anything of the hand?
No. And I don't think and the story that they're going for, as far as I know, I don't think is at this point hand-centric.
Well, it's Wilson Fisk.
So it's more of the Kingpin. But no, they're still, that shit is still linked often with the hand shit. They can do that if they want to. But like, I don't think it does. Again, post-November, we have this trailer, and the first thing off the bat is they're like, oh, remember how fucking awesome Cox and, yeah, I remember how awesome Cox is. Cox is awesome. Cox?
What's that, Miguel?
Cox is okay. Don't be afraid of Cox. Ladies, especially, don't be afraid of the Cox. But
blind. Love is blind.
Love is blind, ladies. But who's the actor who plays Kingpin again? Is
D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio, right? So Vincent D'Onofrio, it's like, do you remember how good, you know, D'Onofrio and Cox were together on screen? They were like, oh, they give you that heavy, like, dramatic tension. And then they also like, also, remember all the people's bones getting broken on this show?
Yeah, yeah.
All the blood that this show had?
Yes.
And that was a question many people had. I was like, well, it's going to be on Disney+. The last time we saw Daredevil two previous times in the MCU, he did that nice little guest shot in the Spider-Man third film, right? And then he showed up doing the Walk of Shame in the what's its movie? In the She-Hulk show, right?
Right.
So we're all kind of like, okay, what's going on? Well, there's a big joke you and I had. Was it like they do a whole
bat cave kind of like, here is the gallery of all my like uniforms and stuff. And it's like, it's, he opens up sort of cabinet and there are all these like Daredevil cowls. And they're all different colors. There's a black one. There's like, I think some of the intimation is they're going to go into like, well, what are the things that Daredevil's doing during the snap and post-it? So that'll explain where those cows come from. Here's the problem.
Which color does he know to pick?
Oh, Daredevil doesn't know that they're different colors. Like, honestly, it could just be like the people that could be selling.
I would argue that you can smell the different type of colors.
I would argue that they've done exactly that sort of.
He knows what yellow five
in
is
in the comics. In the comics, they have done things. I can touch the surface of this thing, and I can tell whatever about the paint that's fucking on it, and so therefore it must be red. It's like, get the fuck out of here with that shit. But okay, fine.
I just pulled up the cast. Charlie Cox, Deborah Ann Woll, John Bernthal returns.
All the great returners, yeah.
Eldon Henson, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Who was the person you pointed out to me before, Edward, though?
Clark Johnson of Homicide.
And the S.H.I.E.L.D. fame.
Okay, so what's Lewis?
What are you telling me? Listen. Daredevil, you can't be taking the law into your own hands.
Gandolfini's kid, Michael Gandolfini, is also in this as well. I mean, it's all around stellar cast.
There was a couple of shots we saw the kid who played Wilson Fisk younger in the previous Daredevil might also be showing up. He's a little older now. There might be some flashbacks. Okay. And or we also were like, Ed, you know, Vanessa is making her.
She seems to have returned.
But also, and we're always like, well, Wilson Fisk and Vanessa have canonically in the comics a son who goes on to be a villain of a lot of importance to stuff like Spider-Man and whenever they do Gang Wars, the Rose, right?
Wilson Fisk's
son who wants to usurp him as the kingpin of crime.
Okay.
Maybe they do something like that. As you said, Frank Castle coming back, seen Bernthal, you know.
You said that Bullseye, portrayed by Wilson Bethel, is going to die.
I think, well, the trailer starts with, you know, Cox and D'Onofrio, you know, sitting down at a diner and they're having a discussion. And one of the things that we learned that, okay, D'Onofrio is either running for mayor or is mayor. And he asks, you know, Matt Murdock point blank, he's like, why did you stop being a vigilante? And he said, certain lines were crossed. Now, again, we don't know if that's how it's going to play out in the actual show. But in the comics, it was a whole thing that at some point Daredevil was kind of like, didn't give a shit if Bullseye died. He'd been one of those, super standard Silver Age type superheroes, your Spider-Mans, your Captain America's, like, I will not kill for no reason, blah, blah, blah. Then he had a whole Catholic and lawyer thing where it was just like, morally, I cannot sanction murder.
But he's born again, so he's Protestant now.
But yeah, that's a whole other.
He's born again.
Here's the problem. Because he's blind, did he nail it to a synagogue? It was like, my bad, guy. I didn't know what the door was. But there is this sort of like point where, because of the Catholicism and the law, and then all those things being in diametric opposition to his job as his choice to be a vigilante, he makes a choice at some point to be like, fuck it. I don't care if my Lex Luthor fucking dies. I don't care if I'm going to contribute to it. And there, I think if I'm remembering correctly, it was an up in the air sort of thing. It was one of these, like, I'm holding on to him and then he falls and breaks his spine for all intents and purposes. And again, it wasn't that he died. It wasn't that Bullseye died. It was this sort of like, did you fucking let him go on purpose, Daredevil? Did this guy cross so many lines for you that you were like, I got to cross my line? And I could see that being a thing. Look, I'm like, you and I were both like so crazy about the Daredevil Bullseye fights in the Netflix show, right? Yeah. And of course, we want to see that again. But I think that's diminishing returns if that's all they do when they bring back. If they just like, let's just do what we did before. Mm-hmm. I could see Daredevil maybe during the snap. Maybe we'll get a look at. And maybe he killed Bullseye or allowed him to get killed. And then it's like, that's it. I'm out. And he's back
because he's like, oh shit, Wilson Fisk is either going to become mayor or is mayor, and I'm really I seem to be the only person, you know, in this fucking town with his head screwed on right. And Lord knows, none of us knows how that is right now. None of us feels like completely sane people in a world where everyone's like, oh, no, 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 no. Let's make the criminal our leader. There's nothing about that that is applicable today in any way, shape, or form.
No, no, no. That said, though, we last saw Wilson Fisk.
Right.
In Hawkeye.
Right. How the fuck did he pull this off?
Yeah, you know, he disappears, you know, Lady Hawkeye takes him out, and it's like, you know, no. The mother took
the mother hit him once with the car, and then he
disappears.
No, then he doesn't disappear. Remember, kid, you know, Kate Bishop has a fight with him and takes him out.
Yes, right.
And then we get into the whole Echo shit. Remember?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Which is I have to ask. I don't even, that's how forgettable fucking Echo was.
Right.
I know I remember he appeared in Echo. Did he show up again with an eye thing? Because remember he was shot or not. I don't even remember how that all tied itself up. So I have a question is, how do we get to him now being mayor?
It's like a wave of a hand and then, you know, some time passes by, like passes.
Skrulls. I blame Skrulls.
Yeah, there were, like, again, a bunch of Disney Marvel
mediocre offerings.
Yeah, I will go down on record saying, like, you know, Secret Invasion was one of the worst things that's ever been put out. But anyways,
We are where we are here now.
Yeah,
we're all in. We really want this to work because I do think. I remember when the Daredevil series on Netflix was around, mm-hmm. and I remember being in a bar.
It was a breakthrough.
I remember
in my opinion.
I remember being in a bar. I used to walk by this.
Was it in Hell's Kitchen?
No, but it wasn't Soho. It wasn't Soho. It was in Houston. It was on Houston Street. And I remember going there. I used to pass it all the time. I would cash my checks. And it was this bar, and I remember the food there was really good. I kind of just discovered it. It was just like, oh, this place also sells fruit. And the food was really good. Yeah, it had a great selection of, like, beers and wines and ciders and stuff, but the food was amazing. So I just, like, every Thursday, sit down and eat. Suddenly I'm there one day, and just that's the whole bar. That's all they're fucking talking about. Did you see Daredevil? And like, this one guy is telling this one girl, and the girl's going, "Yeah, I know, I gotta watch it."
These Soho hippies. What do they know?
Hipsters, yes.
Hipsters, what do they know?
But I like it was, as John pointed out, it was a game changer. A
water cooler conversation.
You know, it was, everyone was talking about it. Everyone was, it definitely led the pack in its time. We forget how long ago it was, but we're talking, it was the antidote to the CW, like, Arrowverse shit.
Because part of that was like, hey, have you seen Arrow yet? Have you seen Arrow?
No one has said.
And also, I think you would agree, it countered Marvel's own movies,
because
it was really campy, really, really humor-based.
Okay, this is super dark. It's a super dark, super dramatic.
It felt like DC to me.
Charlie Cox was cast in 2014, so which tells me that it's 2015, 10 years ago.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing I see with Vincent D'Onofrio in the preview. I see that it's been like 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
Yeah.
He's lost the weight.
He's lost a lot of weight. He's already played
RDJ's dad in The Judge. No, RDJ's brother in The Judge. Sorry, RDJ's brother in The Judge.
So,
can I just say, going back to a conversation we had a few years ago, a few days ago?
But it's too late.
I just want to go back to what you just said. You just said that D'Onofrio played RDJ's brother in The Judge. That's as fucking insane. That is as fucking insane. As Michael Dorn's brother
on Star Trek,
being Paul fucking Sorvino.
Oh,
that does not track in any way, shape, or form.
All right.
Now, talent-wise, it does. D'Onofrio is
RDJ's equal in talent.
I'm glad we're coming.
Those two men did not come out of the same vagina.
I'm glad we're coming to close because I'm glad we're coming to close. But here's the thing, Jonathan. For the past 3 weeks, I've just been binging on classic Star Trek: The Next Generation, and I'm having these conversations with Miguel as I'm watching like season.
My God. Wouldn't it have been so, how much better would it have been if Worf's brother was D'Onofrio?
And the thing is, there's a scene, so I'm on to season four. I make it to season four. Lieutenant Worf has this, you know, he's raised by Russian parents on Earth, right? Because he was an orphan. And like season four rolls around, season five rolls around. When Paul Sorvino comes on in season six?
Yeah, it's like season six, seven.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Not completely out of nowhere.
Yes, but here's the thing.
Not completely out of nowhere. When the first season, there is this like short little thing where Worf's talking to his mother Klingons. It's like, hey, how did you end up on the ship? And it's like, oh, there was attack. My family was killed. The Starfleet officer
Paul
raised
Sorvino,
me.
Paul Sorvino.
My stepbrother. We both joined Starfleet at the same time. He washed out. I stayed. That was the last you heard about it until season, again, six or seven.
Paul Sorvino, a.k.a. Mira Sorvino. See, Jonathan wasn't like, who's Paul Sorvino? And I pulled up a picture.
Mira Sorvino's father.
Of course.
Okay.
And a character actor.
You know,
I've seen him
right?
in
He's in a bunch of things, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's in Goodfellas,
I'm
right?
just saying, look, Ed.
But he appears on it. He comes on a transport, on Transporter. Hey, it's me, Worf.
Paul Sorvino.
Your adopted brother.
Badass adopted brother. Because that's the other part.
I got some olive oil for you.
Again, the other part is that, like, I assume when you heard that at best, if there was an age difference, it wasn't that big. Because, like, oh, we both joined at the same time. And it's like, no! No! These men are not the same age.
He's at least 15 years old.
Yeah.
I must ask you to stop talking about my adopted brother that way. That would be way dishonorable.
Which adopted?
And I will have your head.
Which adopted brother is that word? Which
brother? Damn it.
Which brother that you don't talk to anymore?
You mean, you're talking about?
That?
Okay, that's another one. There is a season three episode where this boy becomes orphaned. The mother dies. And so this kid ends up being under Worf's care.
Not exactly. No, it's more like it's this one episode they do where they finally do like a, hey, what happens after a red shirt dies? What happens to one of the nameless bridge crew? If they have a kid on board, right. And like all the grieving, it's not about like, oh, here's an emergency we got to do. It's just, oh, here's this kid is grieving. His parent has died.
Wesley Crusher's like, hey, you know, maybe I should
just
talk to him because my dad died
just like
too.
My dad died. Right?
And Worf's like, you know.
At the end, it's like, I will make you, because he was in command of the mission. He was like, I will make you adopt you as my brother and you will be part of my house. And we're going to do this cool Klingon ceremony. And then it's like, and then it's just like, we're now forever
brothers.
We are
brothers. It's like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, you know, 5-6 years later, it's like, hey, hey. You ever hear from that Jeremy Astor kid?
Who?
You know, Jeremy Astor. He became part of your house?
Oh, right. He's doing good, I guess. I don't know. Last I heard it was like
a lot of crazy things on a rewatch of Star Trek: The Next Generation. And you haven't even reached the Sorvino episode yet. That's the
which I remember.
You said season five, and it's just like we're just doing, like you said, it's just doing like Lexana.
There are a lot of crazy things. So, like, you know, I'm watching an episode called Redemption Part 1 and Part 2 where Worf leaves Starfleet. He basically says to Picard's like, sir, I have, you know, I'm going to take up this job to be with my brother and my people. And, you know, they give him a whole entire, like, you know, walk through the quarters, hero send off, you know, everyone's like, you know, like at attention. And we know he's going to come back to Starfleet. So I'm telling Miguel's like, well, I left this great job and I'm out of the job and I have to.
No,
that
more like
that didn't work out.
No, actually, it's more like his brother told him about this job opportunity
He moved to this new city.
Things didn't work out.
The startup like lost all its cash, and now he's like stuck in this town, and he doesn't really know anybody.
I've got to beg for my job back.
And now he's got to call his old boss out after they made a whole big deal about leaving.
Like, sir, we have a subspace call from
Lieutenant Worf. How good to hear from you,
sir. Yeah, let me guess. Things didn't work out at Kronos, did it?
Well.
You come crawling back.
Crews come crawling back to the John Luke. Couldn't hack it in the real Klingon world, could you, Worf? Huh? Turns out us weak humans are doing something good here all along, huh? Our favorite thing to do now is just completely corrupt and immoral Picard. Just a Picard who is a scumbag. He's a risk.
Couldn't hack it in sanitation, could you?
Get back to work.
At half your pay.
Okay, folks. So hopefully we can come back to you once we've seen other things, and once we've seen Captain America: Brave New World. There are a lot of things coming down the pike. Brother Paul got greedy.
Yeah.
Is there any guys? If you guys are in need of excellent audio engineering, contact Los Depresos.
That's very sweet, Ed. Yes, losdepresos.com. I still do some small things privately at home, but that's most of my business is over there now.
You just kissed old Jonathan Vergara and Basie Bob Brockman.
I'll say this though.
Hey, you're talking to a two-time Grammy nominated. I didn't win the record we worked on.
Either way, though. But
please tell everyone what the record
was. Sima Funk? I think Latin record of the year and alternative rock record of the year.
You hear that, all you other fucking podcasters? You hear that, you other fucking podcasters?
We got ourselves an Emmy.
Emmy and Grammy. He's fucking, he's the Rita Moreno of fucking engineering, all right? He's coming for all of them.
wait. That would mean he'd been raped by Jor-El himself.
Is that no? I was really more going for the fact that Maria Moreno was she won the Oscar.
Oh, okay.
She won the Grammy. She won the Emmy, and she won the Tony. So somehow you've got to work this into
getting
a live
closer
show.
To being nominated EGOT.
You
is
gotta,
what you're
you
saying?
Got, you got
nominated
you got,
EGOT.
You gotta get up somehow. You've got to be able to win a Tony for sound engineering. And that's the thing. If you could, you absolutely would deserve it.
I will do my best.
Here's the thing.
I'll make you guys proud.
I get to see the Los Depresos on Instagram, and
the transformation.
It's like a Death Star. Like every day, like something gets passed. But
actually, before we close out, I would like to ask just on air right now. What is the interior of the studio? Like, did you change all that wood paneling and stuff, or
Most of the construction he's talking about is the greenhouse we built on top.
Okay.
On the rooftop.
Greenhouse.
Okay.
You know, we're gonna be growing some interesting plants for you.
You're gonna be growing talent.
All right, no.
According to what you said last time, you're growing talent.
Yeah, that's right, growing talent. That's right.
Is that that's just
that's what we named the plant.
Yeah, exactly. That's the name of the brand. Yo, man, you got any of that talent, bro? You got that fucking talent, bro.
Thank you.
I'm gonna tell Bob. We're gonna see. Just keep me off anything official, because I don't want the cops.
Until next time. To be continued.
To be continued.
Hey, thanks for listening to Be Continued, the Fanboy Podcast.
Thanks, Clark. Please also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and also our various platforms, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.